podcast. I'll be on the road tonight speaking at Seattle Town Hall in Washington State at 7:30. Then back to New York Friday. I'll be speaking at the New School at Tishman Auditorium on 5th Avenue at 7 p.m. Saturday, I'll be in Olympia, Washington at Capitol Theater at 11. Then at Powell's Books in Cedars Hills Crossing in Beaverton, Oregon. Then I'm off to California, stopping in Eureka, Berkeley, Santa Cruz, Palo Alto, San Diego, Los Angeles, Santa Barbara. Check our website. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Justice Within Reach. On Friday, May 12th, from 6 to 10 p.m. at Castaway Portland, located at 1900 Northwest 18th Avenue in Portland. Justice Within Reach is the annual Mackenzie River Gathering Foundation Social Justice Party and fundraiser, featuring food from vibrant table catering and events, dancing with the LaRonda Steel Band, and a performance from 2017 Lila Jewel artist Taza Williams Art. Again, that's Justice Within Reach on Friday, May 12th from 6 to 10 p.m. at Castaway, 1900 Northwest 18th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, accessories, and gifts with a focus on U.S.-made and certified fair trade natural fiber clothing since 1984. Gazelle is located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at gazellenaturalfiberclothing.com.
Welcome to Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler, and I'm here with Paul Roland.
Good morning.
And we have quite an interesting show today. We're going to be discussing the Oregon county fair's decision to not put up a fake totem pole and the way they listen to Native people. And we'll have Wendy Ireland, who is herself from the Haida Nation and from a family of carvers, and her perspectives on that and the fight against appropriation. And you just heard Blackfire, and we might have Kleban Ali on this hour who is a member of Blackfire, the band, a Navajo band, and he will be in town tomorrow speaking at an event on Indigenous resurgence and the radical anti-colonial struggle.
And that will be tomorrow from 6 to 9 p.m. at Portland State University in Smith Memorial Student Union 26. And there will be Kind of Who's Freedom from Canada, a really fiery young Native activist, Amanda Lickers, and Clee Benally. From the Idle No More movement to the events at Standing Rock, the idea of Native resistance has been receiving increasing mainstream visibility. There's an endless onslaught of extractive and destructive industries involved in land theft, Indigenous dispossession, and the desecration of sacred places. This event will bring a variety of Indigenous voices from across Turtle Island to discuss what is needed to build an effective mass movement to resist the ongoing manifestations of settler colonizations across this land. And you can check out that Facebook event page, Indigenous Resurgence and Anti-Colonial, Radical Anti-Colonial Struggle, tomorrow evening. And the Savage Family, who I believe is from Washington State, will be playing at that event as well. One more quick announcement before we go to our guest. Stand Up Against Racism in David Douglas School District, also tomorrow, 7 to 10 p.m. at 1500 Southeast 130th. And this is, I'm reading from the Facebook page. Please attend the next David Douglas School Board meeting. We request your solidarity and testimony. Please, one, demand the resignation of member Bryce Anderson for his racist anti-immigrant remarks at the March 9th board meeting. These are not my words or views. I don't actually know that much about it. I'm just reading. Two, demand the board formally censure member Bryce Anderson for his racist anti-immigrant remarks at the March 9th board meeting. Failure to condemn racist speech as racism. Express your support for board member Andrea Valderrama, is the only person of color on the board ever and the only member to condemn Bryce Anderson's comments as discrimination. And more, again, that's tomorrow evening, 1500 Southeast 130th in Portland, at the David Douglas School Board meeting. And with that, tell us about the Country Fair totem pole controversy.
Yeah, so I was talking, the Oregon Country Fair has been doing this story, what they call a story poll. I guess it's been put up the Ritz? Saunas there, and
it's actually they're a kind of a part of it's a little it's not necessarily Country Fair itself that did the totem pole. It's this Ritz sauna group and the so-called Flamenco Clan, which is kind of a group of craftspeople that kind of grew out of the group that originally did the Ritz sauna that kind of has gone through a couple different transmutations.
Yeah, I think it originated to provide like showers and baths and stuff at the event, which is very dusty. And then they sort of went from this sort of theme of like putting on the Ritz and top hats to basically appropriating Northwest culture, particularly specifically Haida culture, which is not native to Oregon and the Kalapuya. They're actually within the Kalapuya territory. And so I was talking to Wendy Ireland, and she comes from a family of carvers, and they've been organizing to try to stop this. And last week, the Oregon Country Fair Board announced that they were not going to allow that pole to be put up this year. They listen to Native people.
And we have with us Wendy on the phone. Good morning.
Hi there. Hi. Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, we talked a bit earlier, but yeah, maybe you can go over your perspective and what it's been like taking on this latest act of appropriation.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm Wendy Ireland, and I'm actually a Kwakwaka'wakw First Nation. So that's near Haida, and many Haida people are relatives. It's just the way our family structures work. We do share a lot of cultural items. And totem poles and that Northwest Coast Arts style in particular, which is called Formline. And ovoid is actually the shape that comes out of it, and it's very specific to that area of the world. And it actually isn't seen anywhere else in the world, which is pretty significant. And because of things like that, a lot of our art is really embedded in our whole society structure. It's not just art. It's our ceremonial items. And anything that we do that has to do around this type of art style, whether it's carving or painting or anything to do with that style, very deeply meaningful. And so when you see that art elsewhere, typically you want to know who the family is that made it, you know, and what it's about and those kind of things. And when it gets appropriated at this level, it loses sheer context and meaning for us as a whole people who are still overcoming, you know, genocide and extreme colonization. These objects and items were removed from us during a ban in the what's called the potlatch ban. My direct family was, all of these items were removed from us. They went to jail for performing these ceremonies that these objects belong to. And so we're hyper aware of pretty much everything about our culture because we're still in survival mode. And we are beautiful people, and so I understand people's draw to it. But really what's going on at the RIT and with the OCS between, there's just several compounding issues because of it. First is the story pole, which they've insisted is not a totem pole, but it is by any, I mean, there's been a lot of trying to convince me or talk me out of what I know and my knowledge base. As an educated Indian woman and as a member of that tribe. So it's been a struggle in that way. It's very taxing to really try and explain yourself and explain your position and have a position and be able to stand up to a large group of people who are pretty sure that they're respecting me and my culture, but it's on their terms. And so I don't feel respected. I feel ripped off. And as a matter of fact, the level of ripped off that I feel has allowed me to raise the bar and to address it at another level. And the fact is it's very illegal what they've done. Our items are protected under international laws, both in the Canada, which is where we're located. Kwakwaka'wakw Nation is from Alert Bay. And then we are down here in Oregon, which is very far from home for me, at least in that perspective, because I'm also California Indian. I'm Paiute and several other intertribal in California, which actually has bridged over into this area as well. So the dynamic has grown a lot more. There's been a lot of resistance from, I don't think it's, you know, online it's really hard to tell, but it feels like the pushback and all that. I've been accused of sort of taking down the entire Oregon Country Fair, which is a lot of power on my one little part. I don't think I have that kind of power, nor do I want that happening at all. What we need to see happening is some sort of, well, they haven't really even admitted to any wrong. They're not actually seeing it. They're actually not seeing the level of harm that it's causing to my family. And what it is simple little things aside from our cultural objects. One thing in particular to my tribe in particular and is very significant is that we have these shields, and they're made out of copper, and they're called copper shields. And they're highly political items that are forged out of copper, and we use them in very political ways having to do with, well, the last time a copper shield had been invoked into anything big was to shame the government in Ottawa. And that was during the more time. We don't mess around with these items. I actually have a small one that's a pendant that was made for me. And I just put it on. It was a graduation gift from my brother. And then I'm looking at this rich sauna issue with the poles and the Northwest Coast team, and I see crooked Crooked Beach and Raven and Sinequa and Sisyl and all of our mythological creatures adorning this Shasta. It is very irking at one thing, but and it hurts at another level. But then, so I'm trying to find out more. I can't actually get to the location, but I need to know more before I start making any bigger squawk about it. Mm-hmm. So I see these, they have these tokens for the spa, and they've actually got those coppers designed on the tokens. And these are like collectible items now for the OCF. People have these tokens to get into the spas with basically our family, my immediate family designs on them, because they are beautiful. I realize that. That's why we're protecting them. They're not free to give away. You can't just take them and use them. And unfortunately, people don't actually do the research to find out what the meaning is behind some of these items are. And I'm concerned because some of these creatures that they've got hanging out of their bathroom, not their bed, they get mad. I keep calling it bath stalls, at their saunas, their ritzy spaces, that we haven't actually been invited to either. Huh. These things, you've got to expect there to be some kickback.
So, yeah.
And it's ironic. It's ironic when you have Raven, squawking at your behest, and then, I feel like it's really speaking to me to speak up on behalf of these items.
Yeah, I think. You were mentioning that these that they basically have taken items that you mentioned, these shield items, copper shield item symbols, and actually just appropriated them for bath tokens. And without permission, without talking to anyone, your family, and have used them for a purpose that is really diminishes their significance and their importance in your culture, in which case you were saying they're only used for very important purposes, and really what it sounds like, almost like diplomatic purposes, challenging the Canadian government. It takes something that has a huge place in your society and denigrates it and reduces it to something small and commodified that they use for toilet tokens.
Yeah, it feels like a joke, kind of.
Yeah.
And the fact is that it's not only that on the tokens, because there's several different kinds of tokens over the years. I guess they get them reminted over time. And, on one side it's got that, the copper shield, but another one has that, has another, I think it might be, I'm not sure what it is, but it is a Northwest Coast style, one of our creatures, or one of theirs that they've reformed, which they keep doing, is remaking a flamingo into Northwest Coast style. It's just, for the flamingo clan. But it actually says on that coin, Eagle Sweat Lodge.
Oh, God.
It's extremely conflicting for a lot of people, and any Indigenous people are going to have trouble reading that and being okay with it. I immediately get kind of like I'm kind of lost when I say that, when I think of the image and what it says on it.
Yeah.
There's so many things wrong with that, I could write a huge essay, at this point, and I don't have time for that. And
well,
we need to be taught. We need to learn, actually, to leave ourselves alone.
Yeah, the Sweat Lodge is really very sacred. I mean, it's a prayer. It's something that is not appropriable. They cannot appropriate that and use it.
Well, we don't even do that.
I mean, that's actually cross-cultural. That is not part of... Yeah, that's actually from my tribe, from the Lakota, Dakota people. We do the sweat lodges, and so do the Dene, my mom's people, the Navajo people. But they do it differently.
We do it in California too. But not up here. I mean, there you don't really hear of that at all.
Yeah. So it's sort of, they just kind of mash up of Native cultures just to kind of sell and to give some kind of special sort of experience to their event, rather than creating their own. I mean, they had some sort of Ritz top hat thing going on, and then they...
How cute is that? Why would they get rid of that?
And they... How do you... The whole thing of, like, taking their... They had originally, like, this flamingo thing, and they call themselves the Flamingo Clan, and they've actually adapted your cultural, the form line style and created a flamingo one. Have you seen?
Yeah. No, it's nonstop.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of stuff going on like that, because every day is a new day of something of that magnitude of, oh my God, are you serious? Really, it's kind of ridiculous at this point. And I'm really grateful that people are talking about it, and we're not just the bad guy. I mean, we're always the bad guys in these areas of asking for our stuff back or to not take it. And that's really the bigger problem overall, and because it's consistently ongoing.
Well, the I think that, you know, what they don't understand, I see a comment by, and I think it was in the Eugene Weekly, they quote a sculptor, Kate Ollie, a longtime fairgoer who teaches there at the Lane Community College, and she's like, art is a form of communication. I think the fact the artist wasn't aware of the risks of cultural appropriation is unfortunate, but she thinks that it could have been a chance for a lost opportunity for cultural conversation. Yet they don't recognize that we have ways of sharing, but they ignored all of those traditions, and then they never even approached your family. And like you said, they didn't even invite you guys to come to their to their sauna.
Oh, that one's never crossed your mind, but even more so is that they did have a diversity training program involved in that. If they did invite people to actually teach them cultural competencies, they pulled out. Okay, they pulled out after the OCF meeting about the poll because of it's just a racist situation, and they're not learning properly, and it keeps being on their terms.
They want everything on their terms. Okay, I think we have a caller.
Yeah, Bill. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Good morning. Much love, Paul. Really love your show. But first of all, I'd like to give some acknowledgement to the fact that the story polls are actually a set of four that are to commemorate four people who were killed that were members of the Flamingo Clan that were longtime members of the Oregon Country Fair. I guess I need to also disclaim I am a Country Fair elder.
Okay.
The fact that you have no representative of the Flamingo Clan on to discuss is quite reprehensible and really out of character for Cabu and out of character for Paul.
Well, when the show is being co-hosted by me, my name is Jacqueline Keeler. I am a native journalist, and it's a time for the Native community to discuss these issues that are important to them. I understand that the poll was to commemorate the death, I think, in an airplane crash by some of your clan members, but appropriating this young woman's family's culture and not getting their permission and doing it in a formal way is completely inappropriate. There are many ways you could commemorate loved ones.
Excuse me, but I think the way that this has been approached, this has been in the plan for over 5 years. And for these people to come in at 5 years on to then claim...
Did you approach the family 5 years ago? Did you approach the family 5 years ago, the artists?
I've been listening to you for a long time.
Did you approach the tribe?
Or is this you having...
Did you approach the tribe?
Is this a discussion, or is this you having a forum to say what you want to say?
Yeah, sometimes Native people need a forum, and we're asking you, did you approach the tribe when you started this project?
As far as I know, my understanding, I was there when this project received the blessings of a gentleman who was introduced as a fifth generation carver. I did not ask his
Did you talk to the First Nation themselves?
Because you're just talking over me.
Well, answer the question. Did you go up to the First Nations community and talk to them?
I don't want to discuss this.
Could you please answer my question?
Talking over me.
Well, answer the question.
Well, if you have other people want to call in, 503-231-8187. Unfortunately, Bill left us. So any other people involved with the country fair who want to have a discussion about this is a very... Oh, go ahead, Wendy.
Okay, that was probably... That's what I deal with. Regular. Nothing's actually occurred. Nothing has occurred. What if I nothing's happened. Nothing... He is just immediately... kind of pissed off. And I'm actually, if you know my demeanor, I'm actually not like that.
I'm not like that either. It seems to me that the sensible, he's like five years ago, it's like these people are the people who you should have approached 5 years ago and gotten their permission. There would not be this issue if there had been a formal.
And he's never answered to that.
No. And the fact some random person he can't even remember the name of, some, you know what I mean, that he talked to once. I mean, that's not the same thing as going to your community, giving formal gifts, having a formal conversation about using your culture.
Yeah, and if I knew about it 5 years ago, I would have said something. I had no idea until 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Someone tagged me in on a post about it, and they're like, hey, this is your tribe in your area. This is like your tribal family. Somebody told me. I didn't hunt it out or anything, and it's just all unfolded like this up until this point. And it's really consistent. I've been attacked online. We've had people call us a gang. Anybody in resistance to it, a gang. We've had
They're calling Native American. They're calling, you know, Native American First Nations people who are concerned about their cultural appropriation. They're calling them a gang.
Yep. Yeah.
And I heard him call you guys these people. Like, yeah, these are the people you were supposed to ask permission from.
Well, it's gotten worse now since I spoke to you last, because what got brought up next, because you've got the story poll, then you've got the risk appropriation issues. But then so they have a poster for the fair. And it is a beautiful poster. I'm not denying that. And I think the artist is great. I want to make that clear in case anyone changes my words around, which keeps happening, which is really mind-blowing. I have a degree in psychology and a minor in Native American studies. I'm well-educated Indian woman. There's a lot of us out here now doing the work, and it's just really challenging. So So this new poster came up. And honestly, because of all the issues and the conditions, the over-conditioning I have of the level of appropriation, through the week, there's always disdain when I think of the OCS for myself.
Yeah.
Okay? And that's really unfortunate, because we actually wanted to go. If I had gone before anybody had cued me in on this and I'd seen any of that, I would have had a horrible time and probably had a tantrum a little bit. I'm tired of it. You know?
Yeah.
It's really kind of hurtful.
Well,
kind of hurtful.
And you brought up before that in Canada, these cultural images are actually protected under law. They cannot be used this way. There are no similar.
Well, they're protected here too.
Well,
they are protected here.
Yeah. Well, they. I mean, I think we have the Indian Indian Arts and Crafts Law, but it doesn't really, as long as they're not pretending to be Native, I don't know how well it applies. But so we have two more Oregon Country Fair people online, Tim and Olivia.
Tim, go ahead. You're on the air.
And I have been going to the Country Fair for almost 30 years. I'm a fair family person. I work out there. And I just want to say thank you so much for having this conversation. The fair is always had a problem with interactions with cultural appropriation and people of color. It's a very, very white event. I'm a person of color, and I've been going there for a long time. I've experienced that from the other side. A couple comments. One is that I know there's a lot of emotion with this. There's a lot of entitlement, and people, I think they shut down when people get so worked up, and there's kind of argument kind of thing going on with the other family elder a minute ago. People don't like being questioned, but there's a way to encourage a dialogue. I know there's a lot of anger, and I think after this cools down a little bit, there can be more dialogue. There's a lot of cultural appropriation out there. There's a booth called Touch the Earth. I'm Asian American, and they really co-opt a lot of the Asian American symbols and language and writing at their booth. And I was really blown away that the fair board, which really doesn't act like this usually, made that decision. One other comment is
that they decided not to have the story poll, you're saying?
Yeah, I was blown away. Uh-huh. I thought for sure this is going to get pushed through. I love the sauna. I've been going there since day one. And, you know, part of what KBOO has done for me and this dialogue has kind of opened my eyes. Like, wow, I wasn't really aware of this. And I think that having that education and knowledge and helping people understand, that's really important. But I was actually really blown away. I thought the fair for certain was going to just let them have it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure and a lot of politics out there. I mean, for old hippies, they've kind of become, when they get power, they start turning like what they were fighting against back in the day. It's really disgusting. But the other thing I want to say is, and I don't know if this is accurate, but a lot of my friends online were posting that the idea that the memorial was put in place after the fact for the four that died in the plane crash as a way to help push it through. I don't know if that's accurate, but it'd be great to find that out. When they started documenting that, because I know that a lot of people were like, no, they didn't do that until after they were questioned about
Well, you know, I totally respect anyone's desire to commemorate loved ones, but I think that when you do it, you have to, and especially for the way in our traditions, in Native traditions, everything is used with permission. You're given permission to do these things. So if you were to use another artist's artwork goes in families. If you were to use their artwork, you would have to formally go and ask their permission and receive it before you could utilize it. And this happens with every single tribe. So even between tribes, we would never use each other's, even in stories, like my family, we're Dakota, but we lived amongst the Lakota people, Sitting Bull's people, and we have some of their family, their stories from their people. And when we tell the stories, we always say that we received this from Sitting Bull's people and we got their permission. And then we can tell the story. Everything is done with permission. It's just our way. And these things are very sacred and they have meaning. And to deprive them of their meaning and give them meanings that are not, you know, and without permission is absolutely, is culturally, it's a violation and it's violating as well.
Yeah. I want to say thank you guys so much for bringing this conversation. I think there's a great opportunity to have some healing and some better education. I know the fair and especially the board and a lot of the backup managers out there, they really need to have a lot of more diversity training and not just kind of the cursory, oh, here's how to be more diverse, but like really deep, intense diversity training. Hopefully this will start the ball rolling with that kind of thing.
Okay, thanks for calling, Tim. Wendy, did you have any responses before we go to our next caller?
Well, I thought it was interesting that Jacqueline had said that, because it's very true. Like in our Kwakwaka'wakw Nation, we share a lot of our culture. Well, all of our stories are kind of integral one to the other, just the way things are set up in that area. And you know, we didn't make this up. This is what the land gave to us, and we are of the land. We are the product of all those symbols that are created and given to us. They're not decorations by any long shot. And while the story told, I just want to qualify a couple things real quick, is that a lot of the designs on there are not our style. They are members of the Oregon Country Fair people who have come over the years. None of those are my issues, except for the fact that the insistence that it's actually not a totem pole, but I've got image. It is a totem pole. And there are a few of our design styles on there. There are a few form lines on there that I saw. But also another compounding issue, and basically what totem poles mean to us. I mean, if you see tourist poles and those things, those are artists selling their art, and they've been consigned to do those items for other people, outsiders, too. And that's really common in the Northwest Coast. You will find designers, even tattoo artists and stuff, who are Northwest Coast. So you're getting authentic art from authentic people, which actually has a value, a high value. We're high art.
I think, what's his name in Seattle? He has that saying, to purchase things, not inspired by Native people, but by inspired Natives, you know? And not Native inspired, but by art made by inspired Natives. So we have another caller, Oliver.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, greetings. I guess I do kind of appreciate the discussion in the forum, but I think that I'm really disappointed to hear how this is being framed once again by KABU programmers. I think this is the third time that I've heard people coming out railing against the Oregon Country Fair family.
Well, this is the show. This show once a month actually features the Native American community's perspective.
You've been over-talking the other callers, and it's really rude. You know,
asked a question, and we just wanted a response.
You're interrupting me, and I'm speaking.
Well, it's I think you're asking about what this is about. And giving you the Native perspective.
Talk over someone call in from the country fair. So not only have you shut down the avenues and being receptive to the bridges of the family.
Has the family been receptive to the Native community? And you've had 5 years to be receptive to the Native community.
How would you know? You're not with the country fair.
I've spoken to the family who actually, these images come from a certain family and you have not contacted the family.
You're an outsider and you're trying to tell the insiders what is culturally appropriate with your ethnic
Wendy is not an outsider to the culture you're appropriating.
Now, furthermore,
I think you are in an ethnocentric bubble that is white supremacist.
If you're a white male talking over Native people
and not willing to listen to Native people.
How do you know I'm not Native?
You're shaming First Nation people.
Yeah, well,
First Nation,
you would understand that there is a way, as a member of First Nations, Indigenous people, of sharing culture. And this is not the way.
That you're on lecturing to country fair people.
Yes, we are lecturing to country fair people. Yes, we are, because they're not listening.
It's revealing.
I think it's revealing of how Native people are not heard.
Oliver.
Well, I'm First Nation, so you're not listening.
So what First Nation are you, Oliver?
I'm Blackfoot. And I have Navajo blood. Most people have never had their blood tested, and I think everybody.
I'm actually a citizen of the Navajo Nation. Okay,
now, the point you're not. Are you enrolled? Who's the family?
Who's your family? What community are you from?
I'm a caller, and I'm calling, and I'm speaking.
You're trying to appropriate our identity in order to speak over us and to silence us.
No, I'm talking, and you're interrupting me and speaking over me. You've been doing it to other callers before me.
Okay, could I step in here for a second? Could I step in here for a second? So, Oliver, do you feel that there's any validity to the criticisms that have been made of these story polls?
No. None at all, and it's absurd.
You're not Native. You're just pretending to be Native to be able to silence actual Native people.
Now you're telling me what culture I am, and I am not.
Because if you actually were a Native person, you wouldn't be saying these things.
You are totally unhinged.
Your appropriation of our identity to silence our criticism, our valid cultural criticism of appropriation, is absolutely not Native. How would you know what's going on?
Tell me which community you are from.
Which Blackfeet community are you from? Which Navajo community are you from?
I'm not directly involved in a community.
Tell me, because you must know.
But I don't have to be.
Yes, you do.
You need to see my papers. I'll show you my DNA papers.
You know what community are
you? You're so offensive.
Navajo people are, pretty much, full bloods. What community are you from?
Most of us are mixed bloods, and a lot of us had our heritage burned.
Goodbye.
I think we're in a roundabout here that is going nowhere.
We're in an appropriation bubble right now. Yes.
So I think that we're missing the point, which is the issue of these. I wonder if Oliver would care to talk about these tokens that have been appropriated.
Let's move on to another caller. Goodbye, Oliver.
Okay, this is a difficult conversation.
I think it's only difficult if you are totally focused on appropriating Native identity, taking a little tiny bit of like some sort of DNA evidence and the DNA test will not tell you what tribe you are from. That is totally a lie. It only tells you, and most Navajo people are full bloods. I looked at the last census and there are only like 7,000 who are mixed with any other tribe even. I mean, we're not talking about a tribe that it's that hard to figure out which community you're from. If you are Native, you know which community you're from. You know, I'm a 16th French, but that does not mean I speak for the French people or the French nation.
Right.
You know, it's completely ridiculous. You are a member of a nation. This is a citizenship. This is a real identity. It is not something that you fantasize about and then gives you the right to talk over actual Native people and their concerns. If the Oregon Country Fair wants to deal with Native people and this Ritz Sauna wants to deal with Native people, they would actually talk to Native people, and they would have formally approached Wendy's Nation and formally asked permission, and they would have done this 5 years ago.
Okay, I just want to let people know.
We have Cleveland Ollie. We don't need to call to you.
We were hoping to hear from Clee Benally. He hasn't called back in yet.
Oh, we were supposed to call him. I gave you his number.
Okay.
Yeah, call Clee.
Let's call. Yeah. So.
Call Clee.
Okay. Let me just announce what's coming up on KBOO, and then I'll give his number to our engineer. Coming up at 9, it's Justice Deferred, the story of a Portland man shuffled through the criminal justice system even though he didn't commit a crime. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, The Dirtbag tells you how to thin fruit and vegetables to enhance final crops. So while I take this number over to our engineer, let's go to our next caller, Constant. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello, Constant Walker. I'm calling to say that back in the Yellow Thunder days, and that's 35 years ago, Old Man Fool's Crow came to our camp, and he reminded all of us that we are living in a Hayoka world. It's upside down, it's inside out and backwards, and that the only way to deal with this is to be Hayoka Hayokas, which I think maybe Jackie could explain if she got that connection.
Yeah, you mean being like doing everything backwards, a sacred, I guess, sort of a sacred clown. And
yes.
But yeah, I've had the honor of doing the Sundance and actually doing it on Navajo Nation land, which is mixing two of my cultures. My father is Dakota, Ihangtawan Dakota, and my mother is Dene. And I got to Sundance at Camp Anime at Black Mesa, which is where my grandmother's family is from.
Wow.
And so, you know, and my actual, my teacher was a Hiyoka. And I think that, you know, but I think that the way I approach things is a little different. I mean, I think that I approach with my heart and I approach in a forthright way. I don't know, Wendy, how you've obviously been blessed with your own culture and your own family expressing your culture, and I think that when we deal with these things, we deal with each other. We deal with each other in a way that is straightforward.
So, what was your? We have to open up a line to call somebody. What was your point, Constant?
My point was that when we look at the world we're living in today, we need to take into account that it has been all turned upside down and inside out and backwards. So if we're not willing to open up and look at things from other perspectives, we're probably going to miss a lot. And that's the word we had from Grandpa Fool's Crow when he came to marry a couple at Yellow Thunder Camp way back then. Going on a while.
Yeah, I think our point of view is never heard. And the fact that this Oregon Country Fair sauna people had no idea that they were even supposed to approach the actual Native community, First Nations community, and get their permission and didn't inform them for 5 years is a big example of that, that they didn't even know how to do things. And hopefully now they do, and other folks will learn from that.
There's a lot of details that haven't really come out that I'm not clear on, because apparently the Country Fair people say that they did put the word out to the tribes, and it's not clear what that actually means, whether like a letter was sent, do you know anything about that, Wendy?
Was your tribe approached?
No, I've been trying to find a lot of information. It's very difficult. I'm not getting responses back, and it's probably because of my knee-jerk reactions that I've had, which I want to exemplify is a form of triggering, which is probably rooted in historical trauma issues that I have personally, and that span a lot of Indigenous people, because, again, with this not being heard consistently my entire life. So I realized, I want to say, I believe that the issue with the Oregon Country Fair families, which is a big concern overall, is a severe lack of education, and I will say that probably has a lot to do with the system that we're in that prevents or reduces our visibility on anything that is important to us, to mainstream America. We're so underrepresented in every area that I am not surprised that people have no information, or they have slanted information, or they work off of stereotypes, biases, and assumptions and beliefs And so that is a bigger concern, overarching concern, I would
and,
say. So
and, I and, give, and entitlement, the entitlement to the right to our culture on their own terms is just... Okay. Oh, actually, it sounds like Clea is on now. Awesome. Hi, Clea.
Oh, yate, Billy. Good morning.
Yate. So this is Clea Benally. He's a Diné activist, and he's here in Portland. Or are you here yet, or you're still flying here?
We're on our way to the airport, so we'll be there very shortly.
Great. So he'll be here. He'll be speaking tomorrow at Portland State. And I think we announced the details earlier. And I just wanted to bring him into this conversation where we have Wendy Ireland on. Do you want to say hi, Wendy?
Good morning, Clea.
So
good morning, Yate.
Yeah, so she's talking about the appropriation of her culture here in Oregon. They have this thing called the Oregon Country Fair that's been going on for, 40 years? It's sort of a hippie gathering out in the woods, and they were going to do their own totem pole. And so she and other members of her nation put a stop to that.
I've been following the story, and that's incredibly disturbing. It's just a really frustrating and sad affair regarding cultural appropriation.
Have you had similar experiences in Arizona?
Well, I think all indigenous people have faced the exploitation of our culture, you know, I mean, especially Diné culture, when we look at our everything from the traditional rug weavings to silversmithing, our traditional jewelry and our traditional arts and creative expression and intellectual quote unquote property has been exploited all over the world. The Philippines, they still make and mass produce our traditional jewelry, and Zapotec weavers are being exploited, and they're copying traditional rug designs and so forth. And I mean, and beyond that, I mean, I think it's tied to, you know, everything from mascotry to the desecration of sacred places. So that kind of cultural exploitation is rooted in dehumanization.
Exactly, yeah. Do you want to add anything to that, Wendy?
Oh, I just wanted to say again for the Navajo Diné people, because I've been following this appropriation junk since the headdress days that started, four years ago, of really bringing those appropriation issues to light in subculture areas where it's, you know, mostly done. But again, with the Urban Outfitters and how the Navajo Diné people actually have copyrights on these designs. And they can be those, I think Urban Outfitters won one year against the Navajo Nation on their own designs. And so there's always these things going. And what the last caller had said about the Payoka societies, or that we need to be careful of these things, we are aware of that. That's what this is. We know what this is. And we're challenged by it all the time. And so it's pretty consistent with the major eye rolling. My eyes are going to get stuck in my head pretty quick in a minute. And I need to be able to see things. So we want that to slow down a little bit.
I just want to give Clea a chance to say what he's going to be talking about, why he's coming to town tomorrow, because we're running out of time here.
Yeah, and then also how it ties to, the title of his lecture is Indigenous Resurgence and Radical Anti-Colonial Struggle. And it seems like we are in the midst of an anti-radical colonial struggle right now.
Yeah, well, I'm very honored to be joining the stage with Kanna Usmanuel from so-called Canada, who's a longtime sacred site defender. And I think Amanda Lickers might be part of the panel as well. They had some issues and might maybe be joining us by Skype. But what I'll be focusing on is hopefully, building more meaningful connections to fight back and forward regarding these kinds of issues, you know, because the reality is that settler colonialism, resource colonialism, is war. It's war against Mother Earth and war against the people of the Earth. And so, you know, until we see things in that context, our strategies are always going to fall short. And so part of that is just understanding what that means, understanding meaningful ways to engage with Indigenous folks. And then that way we can build meaningful, orientations or configurations to, you know, either be side by side or have each other's backs in a way that can be more effective. And so, you know, a lot of folks are aware of what's going on in Standing Rock, but, you know, they don't recognize that the struggle is everywhere. This front line is everywhere to defend sacred lands and indigenous lands, waters, and on our bodies. And so if people really want to use that term decolonial or anti-colonial, they have to really understand and come to terms with what that means right where they're at on the land that they're standing, where they are perpetuating settler colonialism.
Exactly. So that's tomorrow, May 11th at between 6 and 8 p.m. at Portland State. I wanted, actually, Clea is actually, a book I edited just came out called The Edge of Mourning, Native Voices Speak for the Bear's Ears. And Clea has a chapter in it called The San Francisco Peaks and the Politics of Cultural Genocide. And I just wanted to read a quote that's actually like in the book and from you. So it says, the question has been asked, yet we hear no response. What part of sacred don't you understand? Essentially, we're saying, why isn't it enough for us to say a site is sacred and should be set aside and protected and respected because it's integral for our spiritual practice to be continued? And you could also apply that to the issue of images and our art as well. Do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I'm sure you mentioned it earlier in the show, but the Bear's Ears are under attack again. And this is ongoing. We're, you know, as long as Mother Earth is only viewed as a commodity, we're going to have these struggles. Because, you know, for us as indigenous people, there is no dichotomy. And it's hard to speak in generalities, but I think this one is fairly safe. There's no dichotomy between spirit and nature. You know, we are of the earth by definition. And so wherever there's an environmental crisis, there's a cultural or social crisis because we are people of the earth. And that's what, you know, ultimately when it comes down to it, as long as Mother Earth is viewed as a commodity, we're going to have this conflict. And that extends to our bodies. It extends to, you know, the quote-unquote intellectual property or the expression of indigenous life ways through our quote-unquote art, because it's not art. You can't separate art from our way of life. You know, everything is rooted in cultural expression and connected to our deep, deeply held spiritual ways of being.
Mm. Would you like to add anything to that, Wendy?
Oh, no, that is so perfectly true. That is, I wish more people would hear that and understand that, because this, I mean, that all of that stuff becomes very apparent when you're under attack at some level. And that word under attack has just been overused or whatever, but it is very true that we, you know, like the response from like the Oregon Country Fair or anybody, anywhere, anything Clee's doing, anything anyone's doing over here, anything you're doing, Jack, the kickback from other people and hearing and listening is really, I don't think they understand that those cause triggers also. That is in our body. We are feeling that. It is resonating outward in our behaviors, or I'll say for myself, in my behaviors or attitudes towards other people who I feel like are actually harming us. You know, I'm trying to be protective and diplomatic at the same time. That's a lot of work. You know, that is the work a lot of times. And finding our allies or instigators and people who will defend us and back us up for all people. Yeah, I think that gets missed also. And for the next seven generations. I'm a mom. You know, these are things I need to ensure for my child. And even if you're not a parent, you have nieces and nephews and cousins and stuff, because we're interdependent societies. Your relatives are my relatives. There's an integrity that's getting missed as a human family that we don't share with outsiders, I guess. I don't even know non-Indigenous people, because that's not exactly true either, if you hear me. I mean, these are big world situations. And literally, like, having callers call in and just immediately start shaming you for your behavior towards it or your attitude towards it, it's really consistent and exhausting. And I hope people can hear that we're good people. Mm. Indigenous people are good people. We are the way. We have the keys. We have the knowledge base that's since time immemorial. And so those considerations, I just look forward to the time where people will engage, because they want to. Because not because they have to, because they're doing a bad thing, but because they're genuinely concerned for the people.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a big one. So anyway, Clee's very eloquent. You're very eloquent with your words, and I'm really grateful that you guys are really on the front line all the time in a big way. Gilakuswa for that.
Well, we see these images all the time, and we, you know, we all, you know, occupy lands that often belong to other peoples, you know, and even as Indigenous people, we often are on lands that belong to other nations. And the colonial framework that we all live in often makes that reality invisible to us, you know. And I recently, I gave a speech at the White Privilege Conference in Kansas City last Sunday, and I talked about how the U.S. is still a colony, and people often think that it's a nation, but I feel like it's still a colony. It operates as a colony. It is a colony, and we are, and people who are American citizens are basically colonists. And I think that the question I asked everyone there was, what would ethical colonialism look like? Is it possible to live on someone else's lands? And I mean, the purpose of a colony is to extract the wealth and to ship it back to the 1% of the ruling class. And so a lot of these actions are colonialistic. I mean, even the art in our sacred sites. And so it often has the same approach, taking on, Klee did with the Arizona Snowball, protecting our sacred mountain there in Flagstaff, and then what you're doing, protecting these incredibly sacred images from your people, which people see all over the world but don't even know what they really are about.
So I think we have one last caller has been waiting incredibly patiently. So if Moses is still on, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah. Is that me now?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, how you guys doing?
Hi. Great. Good.
Hey, following on what the last guy just said there, which was real beautiful to kind of bring this thing toward some closure, I'd like to make one step past where he left off, and that is, and I'll give you my, I've been a white honky leprechaun mixed with a few other things that got stuck in this country and have lived between Montana and Alaska, and have had many, many friends, native, you know, in all these rural places. So I have more friends native than not, but I'm white honky. So we all, this ownership and all this kind of stuff is like, you know, if you take what I think that you guys should do, and I feel my heart bleeds for, I've got people that aren't here anymore that couldn't handle going through what you guys have gone through. Old hippies die young. I mean, old hippies die hard, and they won't change their mind. Mm-hmm. And the generation of your folks that have been mistreated aren't going to probably flip their switch anytime soon. And the point I see at the end of this is somehow the arbiters of this cultural information need to take the lead and not drawing lines in the sand and saying, hey, you know what? Because the fact of the matter is you can take a group of people out there to Warm Springs, you can take them down into Navajo country, you can go up into the Haida area, and if you can get any consciousness that is a thing in a body to reduce itself down to where you can kind of interface with that, with the way, which you guys can do that. We are unfortunately lost it and now rediscovering it.
Okay, we got to. We're winding down, so we got to run.
So leave this. So people, I want to hear, you know, not line drawing, but the 12-year-olds that are picking up these torches. We need to come to where all this information coming out of the biology is not just divided amongst groups, because these designs and a lot of this imagery is actually out there in nature and will descend into your consciousness if you can bring yourself down to that level. So on some way,
okay, well, we gotta move on and end the show. So thank you very much for calling.
I see this come together down the road, because I think the fair is a beautiful place for people to explore exactly the healing
okay
that needs to happen.
Thank you for calling. Thank you for calling. We have 2 minutes left, so thank you very much for calling.
Yeah, so I think that once again, these our culture comes out of our relationship to the earth, but it also has, we have systems of respect, of protocol, of respecting each other. Even amongst Indigenous nations, we don't appropriate each other's culture without permission, and this is just the way things are done. I mean, everything is done through respect. Klee, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, would you like to add anything?
I have not enough time to respond to everything I said, because I think there's a bit of criticism there. But what I want to say is that it comes down to consent. You know, colonialism is incompatible with consent. And free prior informed consent is a powerful model that's employed in under the UN Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. Whether or not I care about what the UN does, what it comes down to is this framework and standard is very important, free, prior, and informed consent. And if it comes down to it, and if people are violating that, then we have to employ some kind of restorative and transformative justice. And sometimes that means drawing a line because, you know, it has to be done on our terms. We listen to a lot of people say, this is what we need to do. But, you know, we need to heal, and we are healers. And that's part of the work that is charged before us, is to restore these relationships and to take responsibility for these actions and take that stand and fight back.
Great. Yeah, that's I agree 100%. How about any last things to say, Wendy?
We
just have a minute, less than a minute.
Actually, we have 10 seconds.
10 seconds, sorry.
Okay, no, I want to say thank you to everyone who's helping us out and acknowledging and really taking the initiative to listen and learn and grow with us. It's imperative to the future generations and to our current life, actually.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yes, well, thank you both for being on. And I look forward to having more of the discussion. Thanks.
All right. That's it for Wednesday Talk Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival. This year, the festival will be held June 30th through July 4th at Tom McCall Waterfront Park. Festival passes are on sale now, including the Blues Buddy Pass and the Basic 5-Day Pass at early bird prices. More information about the passes, the festival, and more can be found at kboo.fm/WBF2017.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host Chris Hedges Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater in Portland. Hedges takes a provocative look at the current state of revolt in the United States and will recount the U.S.'s continuing history of domestic terrorism while outlining ways for communities to resist before it's too late. Again, that's Chris Hedges Friday, May 26th at 7 p.m. at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under